The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Conan and Stevie are here as usual for our last preview podcast. We won't be back until next February with you, Stevie. It's emotional. You got a picture here before the podcast and, you know, it's an emotional thing.
A picture for social media, huh?
You'll probably get one during it as well, as he usually does.
He has been known
it's just to catch you guys off guard.
How it works.
There is nothing more distracting than me making a point and Stevie's taking a selfie.
Okay, right.
I swear, Willie, I do listen to you.
Before we get going here, I want to give a shout out to Jane O'Connor, who's a huge fan of the podcast. She messages me regularly from Florida and she listens in all the time, and she sent me a message last Thursday asking me to say a prayer for her because Hurricane Irma was on the way to Florida and she was hoping, because she wants to make it back for the All-Ireland final, and she didn't know what was going to happen, and she told me to say a prayer for her. She's asking the wrong man to say a prayer for her, but yeah. Thankfully Jane is okay. Hurricane Irma came and went and Jane is on the way back for the All-Ireland final. She's coming back on Thursday if flights allow it, and she'll be going to the live show on Friday night. So from all of us here, Jane, you survived the hurricane.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully you won't be meeting another hurricane at the weekend.
Right, live show, I want to give a shout out here before. We're in the Academy on Friday night. This is Wednesday and we're at 1 o'clock, and there's 10 tickets left out of 850, something like that. So get in for the last 10 if possible. Kieran McGeaney, Sean Kavanagh, Graham Garrity, Lee McHale, Paul Clark and Ray Cosgrove are all going to be there. We have a GA Jackass that I did with Geezer. We have Connor Sketches, who's doing a warm up slot, and he'll do a little bit throughout the show as well. So it's going to be a great night, and we will release that podcast. Usually we try to do it after the show, but like, I'm going to enjoy a few drinks after the show. I think, I'm not sure whether I'll get it. It'll be Saturday morning at the latest. Look, we'll try and get it out Friday night altogether.
That'll be on Facebook Live as well. There's an all good plug for us.
Yeah, it'll be on Facebook Live on the Sports Show Facebook Live page and also the AIB GEA Facebook page. So I'll announce that on the night. Right, lads, where to start is Jim McGuinness talking about Dear McConnelly. Now, he makes a lot of sense, Jim, about this, and he says, I don't believe there's another county in Ireland where the best player in the county, in the country, basically is sitting there available for the first time all summer and you decline the option to give him a run before the biggest game of the year. This is all about Jim Gavin's thought process. He says, I think the reason he didn't play Dermot was to make a statement of where Dublin are at and about his belief that is within this group. For me, that's a potential risk. Now, we talked about our surprise. We said he should play, or Stevie, you said he wouldn't. No, we weren't saying that he wouldn't. We were saying he should always play. And I'll say the same thing for the final. He absolutely should start the final. The idea that he'd only get 3 or 4 minutes, not even touch the ball, walk off the field in a huff. This is a player you want right, and you want some energy in his legs, and you want to give him a run, a good taster of championship football before the final.
Yeah.
So the fact he only gave him 3 or 4 minutes is not ideal preparation for Dermot Connolly, who's missed the whole summer of championship action since the Carlow game. So I don't know what he's playing at. The odds have been slashed from 4 to 9 for Dermot Connolly to start the final to 1 to 5. So he's an unbackable favourite now not to start this final. So where the bookies have got this information from, I don't know. It's looking more and more likely he won't start the final. I think it's a massive, massive mistake if he doesn't.
I think it's a huge risk. He is on his day the best footballer in the country. There's no doubt about it. He is serious talent. I think I read after the semi-final, it may have been Alan Brogan, I'm not too sure, that Alan Brogan believed at the time that Jim only kept Jamard on for the last few minutes and didn't put on Bernard Brogan at all, simply because he wanted those two players particularly to fight it out over the next couple of weeks to gain their place for the All-Ireland final. Now, I know Bernard Brogan hasn't started regularly this year, but there could be a a starting spot somewhere in the forward line available for one of them. But as you say, the bookies generally don't get too far wrong, and the odds are stacked against Jamer starting. But I think it's a huge, huge mistake. You've got to start your best available players, and now that Jamer has served his ban, he's back available and fit and ready to go for Dublin. You play him because there's no doubt over the last couple of weeks Mayo's plans have been, you know, that Jamer Connolly will be starting this game. So don't, you know, put him in because we want to see Jamer Connolly up against Lee Keegan again, don't we? Like, we love that intense rivalry that those two players have, but Jamer Connolly's the best player. He's a match winner, and don't, you know, keep him restricted to the bench and take him on and try to have him as an impact sub, because Jamer Connolly doesn't want that, the country doesn't want that. No. And we want to see the best players playing in the All-Ireland final.
What's he missed? Like, you know, I couldn't believe he didn't play against Tyrone, because like all he missed was Westmeath, Kildare and Monaghan, yeah, one side of matches. Like,
and this was for something that Jim Gavin campaigned that he didn't deserve. Yeah. This, so it's not like Jim Gavin is holding that, it should be holding, yeah, that against him.
But the argument is, oh well, he missed 12 weeks, but he didn't miss anything. Like, he probably had more intense training sessions than they had football matches. Like, so he didn't really, I don't think he's coming in less sharp than anybody else. And also, like, not to get too much into the analysis right now, but you're right about like Lee Keegan marking him, because what that does, if you don't play Jamie Connolly, you can put Lee Keegan on someone else, like Con O'Callaghan or whoever. Like, if you put Jamie Connolly in, freeze up somebody else, they cause havoc. Yeah. But well, if you don't,
you're right, we're going to talk about matchups in the analysis because they're really, really interesting. There's so many different you know, combinations of backs on forwards, and we'll try and figure out which the best ones are. But my point on this is that if Jim Gavin doesn't start Jamer Connolly, it's arrogance of the highest order. It's an ego trip. It's we can win in All-Ireland against a brilliant team like Mayo without this brilliant player. Yeah. It's Jim Gavin losing the run of himself, like he lost the run of himself before Donegal in 2014. He lost the run of himself buying into this unbelievable free-flowing football that he preached, that was handed down to him by other managers. Now he's learned the hard way against Donegal. That summer, Dublin, after retaining the All-Ireland, hammered Laois, hammered Wexford, hammered Meath and hammered Monaghan. Now, by cricket scores, they beat Monaghan 2-22 to 11 points in the quarter-final. Came in against Donegal, thought the same thing would work again. Arrogance. That was arrogance then. And I think if Dear McConnelly, the best forward arguably in the country, doesn't start an All-Ireland final against a brilliant team like Mayo, who Dublin can barely get over with their best team, that's arrogance, lads. That is arrogance of the highest,
yeah,
order.
But I don't think, listen, we are amazing that he's not going to start. I don't think we can be too critical of Jim Gavin here at this stage, you know, because
if he doesn't start him, you would be critical of him.
If he doesn't start him, I think it's a mistake, you know. But I think Jim Gavin, over the course of his tenure as Dublin manager, has made more right calls than wrong calls. So, you know, and we are, you know, seeing things from a different angle, a different aspect. We aren't involved in the team. We don't see what's going on night in, night out of training. But, you know, from the outside, Jamer Connolly is the best footballer in the country, and you play him. You play him, and that's just, yeah, it. You know, so Jim Gavin, I'm sure, will have his reasons if he doesn't start him, but I think it's a huge mistake because, as you said, they are playing the second best team in the country in Mayo, where they always struggle against. They always find it really tough to play against each other, and Mayo certainly improve their own game when they come up against Dublin and see it as a real challenge to get the best out of themselves. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think, you know, on this particular podcast today, we can't be overly critical of what Jim Gavin is going to do or not do, because we don't know,
yeah,
what's going to happen.
It's interesting enough as well that the odds have been slashed so much. So then you have to double guess this and wonder, is someone from the Dublin camp feeding this out that he's not going to start to surprise the fact that he will start? But you see, again, if that's the case, I don't understand what benefit that is, because Mayo will have planned for Dear McConnelly starting, and they'll also have planned for Dear McConnelly not starting. So these kind of games and this kind of old stuff, I'm not sure in the modern game, I think maybe years ago that might have worked, the element of surprise, but nowadays lads have all their kind of permutations covered, yeah, as in, Lee, you're marking him if he's playing. If not, you'll be on whoever, or you'll be playing there. You know, and then there's, they'll know an hour before the game, yeah, when the final teams are announced.
And the thing is with Lee Keegan marking Jim McConnelly, you know, Lee has had the upper hand in some of their battles together, and if it's not Jamer Connolly that he's on, you know, that means the likelihood is that Lee Keegan can be even more effective for the Mayo cause as well. So, you know,
yeah,
you're definitely, you know, adding to what Mayo can bring to the match on Sunday if you're not going to start Jermaine Connolly, I believe.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sean Cavanagh, lads, had some interesting things to say recently, and he's been talking about Dublin and how they're on such a level above, and he said something about Dublin could win this All-Ireland playing at 80%. They don't have to be a full power. Now, in a small way, I would agree with that, because I think Dublin played both finals last year at 80% and still won them. I don't think Mayo played at 100% either. Mayo 100% should have beaten Dublin that first day, and it's a huge missed opportunity from Mayo. Dublin were there for the taking. So at 80%, Dublin definitely drew with Mayo, I think, in the drawn match. They got two lucky goals as well. But he started talking about Dublin not having day jobs, which I think I don't agree with that. He says it's a huge time and commitment. It's incredibly hard for players. I don't know where the game goes, how more professional it can come. Obviously Dublin are way ahead, and I have no idea how they're able to do it. To try and do a 40 hour a week job and just be blown away from another team who, and maybe they aren't doing a 40-hour week jobs similar to what other counties are doing. And that's the reason they're so far ahead. I don't think Dublin are any different than any other county with stuff like that.
I can actually verify that the Dublin players are working, because on my way over here, quite regularly, I drive up the Keys and I often see Cian O'Sullivan in his work attire.
He's an accountant, yeah. He's an accountant.
And he's working in AIB, or
I'm not sure where exactly he works.
He works over along AIG, maybe. He's over there anyway somewhere. But I know he works. Bernard Brogan has his own business. He's got to put in his own hours.
Yeah, Paul Flynn works in recruitment. You can list them all off. They all have jobs. Like, the idea, maybe they have jobs that their bosses are understanding that they can get off, you know, and they don't have that. But I would think most inter-county
But you go back
squads,
to your own time playing inter-county football, you know, and my own time. And any time that I was involved in a big game or something really important football-wise, you know, my time was flexible as well. So the same can be said for I would say 99% of inter-county players at the minute in hurling and in football. You know, your time is flexible as long as there's a commitment there from the player at a later date to work that time in for their bosses. Yeah. And generally, most bosses will be okay with that.
I think what the problem with Sean is, and I'm going to ask him Friday night on the live show, is that I believe we have some incredibly skilled players he's talking about, and he can't understand who Dublin beat them by so much. But you can often, when you're on part of a team, convince yourself that your team is better than it is. Like, I mean, I've done it. I remember when I moved to Parnell's that we had a few different transfers in, and I had myself convinced Parnell's could win an All-Ireland club. You'll do that because you have to do that. I remember being in America, convincing myself the team I'm on in America would beat club teams at all. Like, I mean, and the reality is you would probably be beaten by 20 points. But the team you're on, you'll always say, well, he's a very good player in that position. Sean Cavan is not living in the real world, in that it's not because Dublin aren't doing 40 hour a week jobs like every other county. I think Dublin squad in that regard is no different than any other county. I think the fact that they all live in Dublin and don't have a commute is a huge plus. But Dublin are just much better players than Tyrone. Tyrone have about 6-7 players that can match up with Dublin, but the other 7 or 8 absolutely are not near Dublin's level.
It sounds like he's putting a lot of it down to maybe the physicality of what Dublin are able to bring, because he's obviously training with Tyrone week in, week out.
Yeah.
Probably thinking that they're doing absolutely everything they can do to be as fit and as fast as they can.
Tyrone
and it's
are a
not
small
working.
Team though, you know.
Yeah. So I think, I don't think that's the reason. I don't think it is fitness or strength or speed or whatever. I think Dublin just are a better team.
There's a couple of things that I look at this on. You know, the first thing is, yes, Tyrone are a fantastic side, and if Tyrone were going to play Dublin again, I don't believe that they'd be beat by as much as what they were the last day out. Dublin had their homework done. Their game plan was perfection, so it was, and they really were patient, but they tore through Tyrone early in the game when they had to. The other thing is, you know, we all know that 10-12 years ago Dublin invested heavily in their underage structures, in their primary schools and their secondary schools to you know, put in proper coaching and facilities for the players and allow them to develop and mature a lot quicker and sooner than other counties. And you can see that with the likes of Conn O'Callaghan and you know, the younger players filtering through the Dublin senior team now. They are more skillful players. And while Tyrone, I would say Tyrone probably have the second best underage structure in the whole of Ireland in terms of, you know, coaching and developing young players, but they're still a wee bit behind where Dublin are at the minute, and that's probably the big advantage that Dublin have.
Yeah, no, probably. And like, I don't know what it is about Tyrone, but they don't seem to breed those big kind of those big players. But like, I mean, I can see where Sean Cavan is coming from, because Sean Cavan has been involved in the Tyrone setup. And like I said, you will always kind of think your team is better than you are. But when I'm looking at this from the outside, And there's a lot of those Tyrone players aren't anywhere near the level of the way the Dublin players are at. So I can give a good reason. Yeah. But I do agree with his 80% thing. They could win it. That Mayo need to bring their 100% game, or else Dublin could win it at 80% like they did in the drawn game. Quickly, lad, Stephen Rochford, this is last week. He was in his press conference and he was like, you know, playing a blinder in his press conference because Lee Keegan was brought up last year. In the press a couple of weeks ago in the press conference, and he's talking about the big calls that went against him. Lee Keegan's black card, still a difficult one to sort of deal with on the back of the publicity that he got in the lead up to the game. So he's bringing back up the publicity, he's bringing up the Lee Keegan. Maurice Deegan came out afterwards and said he missed a blatant hand trip with John Small, which had an effect on Dublin being able to still use a substitute when Keane O'Sullivan pulled his hamstring with 6 or 7 minutes to go. And that's a great point, because not only did Maurice Deegan miss that hand trip, which was very obvious, he gave Dublin that extra sub that they wouldn't have been able to bring on subs early enough, because, or else if they did bring them on early enough, when Keane O'Sullivan pulled his hamstring, they'd be down to 14 men. So that actually had a big bear in the game. So he was clever enough to throw that into the mix as well. Maurice Deegan came out afterwards saying he missed a blatant trip. You know, not giving out about Maurice Deegan, but admitting that he made a mistake. And then he says, in the days after the All-Ireland final replay last year, I said I did feel that it was a concerted effort. This is about the media campaign against Lee Keegan. It's something we've moved on from, and we just look forward to getting onto the field. So again, bringing up the media campaign, bringing up the Lee Keegan black card,
and
bringing up but we've moved on. So like, I mean, there's definitely a bit of thought put into what I'm going to say here, you know, in the press conference, just to put that out in the public domain. What good it does, I'm not sure, but like, I mean, that's the game managers play now.
But I think it's fair enough for him to come out with things he got there. You know, if he feels that you know, the publicity in the lead up to the replay last year certainly went against Lee Keegan, then, and it did ultimately, because he received the black card, then fair enough. And you know, decisions like Maurice Deegan openly admitted that he got wrong with John Small. I remember that incident, and he should have received
as blatant as they ever come.
So you know, and you know, if Keane O'Sullivan pulled up with a hamstring in the last few minutes, then Mayo have an extra man, and who knows what would have happened. But I suppose you're always playing on hindsight then. But he has to use, as the manager in the lead up to an All-Ireland final, any way possible to gain the advantage for his team.
If Lee Keegan didn't want a black card, he shouldn't have committed a black card offence.
You weren't here last year when me and Colin actually shouted at each other about this, and it was actually, that was on the podcast. We roared at each other in the office before the podcast, so like, we're not definitely not getting into that again.
Isn't it interesting? Are we being hypocritical? Like, you know, we're praising Rochford for this, and I think managers should do this. Of course they should. We always think Alex Ferguson was a genius at it, but we sort of gave Dublin a lot of stick last year and even throughout this year now about what they did last year and that campaign that went on. Whereas we could have just said that was smart as well and clever.
See, that campaign wasn't Jim Gavin coming out and saying it. That campaign was
ex-players.
Okay, ex-players, but the suspicion is that it might have been orchestrated behind the scenes. So they're kind of different. Like, if Jim Gavin came out and said that, you wouldn't have too much problem with it.
Yeah.
It's five or six ex-players coming out with the very same narrative. That's a little bit of a different story. I don't mind a manager floating out a few ideas and putting them out there. That's like, they all do that. I don't know what it's like the other way around. But I want to get on to this, lads, is Gooch's testimonial. It's off the topic of the All-Ireland before we get into the analysis section. There's managerial merry-go-round as well, as we're not going to have time to get on to it. There's Mickey Hart's in his job, staying his job, Geezer's staying his job, and Rory Gallagher's gone to Fermanagh. Don't have time for that, because I want to talk about Gooch's testimonial before we get into the analysis. And Gooch is having a testimonial. It's the first of its kind, right? Where he's having a testimonial dinner. So it's backed by Zurich Insurance, and it's aimed at attracting 500 people to a black tie celebration with tables for 10, costing €5,000. Takes place on Friday, October 27. It's like I'm advertising for Gooch here. I'm not getting any slice of this money, at the Intercontinental Hotel in Dublin. Now, two charities are going to benefit for the proceedings: the Kerry Cancer Support Group and Our Lady's Hospital for Sick Children in Dublin. But Gooch is going to also benefit from this to the tune of 250,000. Like, I'm not going to lie. That's okay. Sorry, let me see. Financially for the event. Oh, the total figure would be 250,000 for the event. So if Gooch splits it with the charity, he's looking at 125 grand for his testimonial dinner. So what do you think of that? The way the both of you are looking at me, you're making me think that I've got this wrong. Talk there while I double check these numbers.
Well, first of all, I think it's about time that, you know, something was done in terms of, you know, rewarding a GAA player who has given so much of his time and life towards playing for his county. And, you know, no better player to reward than the Gooch. You know, the same should be done for the likes of Sean Kavanagh this year, Kieran McKeever from Armagh. I'm only naming a few players that have recently retired who have given over 10, 12 years service to their county. You know, it while it is the first of its kind, it shouldn't be the first of its kind, because there should be multiple testimonial dinners for many inter-county players on a yearly basis.
Yeah, right, okay, so my sums are 100% right. So it's attracted at aiming 500 people with a tables of 10 costing 5,000. So there's 10 people at a table, so 500 will go down to 50. 50 by 5,000 is 250,000, right? So there you are. 250,000 is the gross revenue going to be generated by this, and he's splitting it with charities. So if he's taking half of the 125,000. Now, my point on this is I'm 100% sure that this is a great idea for Gooch. It's a great idea for players. I think if too many players start doing them individually, they're going to lose their appeal. You're not going to be having all these four or five. My thoughts on this is that Gooch should not be doing this alone. Every Kerry player that has retired in the last 2 years should be at a top table with Gooch, and that 125,000 should be split between the five, and you get 25 grand each, or how many there are. Or else, if there's five in 1 year, let's have the testimonial dinner for the five, and everybody then that retires, and then they can piggyback a little bit on Gooch's fame, because they're all putting in the same effort. If you've 10 years the same as Gooch, I don't think it's fair that Gooch gets 125 grand and poor Kieran O'Leary, for example. Now, you know, someone on those lines, Aidan O'Mahony deserves it. But would Aidan O'Mahony or Kieran O'Leary, would they be able to sell that? They wouldn't, but they would with Gooch. So that you're splitting that 125 between those three fellas, and they're getting a nice 40 grand each. And that's how it should be done. So always, every year, every county should have a testimonial dinner for retirees. And if you want to do over the 10 years, do over the 10 years. But it shouldn't be just one player getting it, because I don't think that's fair, because Gooch would not be anywhere near the level Gooch is without the Kieran Donahue's, without the lads grafting out the field, the Aidan O'Matney's giving them diagonal balls, all those things. Conan, you're shaking your head.
I was just going to say, what's the incentive for Gooch there to split it? Because like, yeah, it is, they're piggybacking his name. Like, he could get 100
bit
himself.
But he's also part of a team. Yeah. It's not an individual sport.
At the same time, you know, soccer players get their testimonials and all. I know they're professionals, but, you know, my point on this is, and what you were saying there is a very valid and fair point, that it should be split out, but there's certain players who carry more, I suppose, esteem in the game, and Gooch is one of them, and, you know, he can attract that type of probably funding towards an event like that there, and that those type of numbers and figures towards an event like that there. So if somebody on their own merits can do that, then so be it. And listen, if Gooch gets 125,000 or 150,000 off the back of a testimonial dinner, then I say best of luck to him. Fair play to him.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit jealous of it now, if I'm being honest. When I read the amount of money, first of all, I saw the testimonial dinner, I thought that's a great idea for Gooch. Then I saw the figures involved and went, here now, that's not really fair. Like, that was my initial reaction. Like, I mean, I've played for Leash for 10 years, I didn't get a Dickie Bird. Stevie, you've been a player of the year, you didn't get. I'd be a little bit jealous of him getting 125 grand for a testimonial dinner. I would be a little bit jealous of it. Immediately, that's my initial reaction. I would be thinking
about coming back out of retirement.
I haven't officially retired for Leash. I'm considering maybe doing this.
If you were as good as Gooch, so you might have had your chance to get 125 grand. Is there going to be a match? I'd love to see a testimonial game.
I think a testimonial game would be a great idea too. And I think that charging a tenner in or something like that, and have a Legends versus a senior team, and have it like, you know, Dublin, when they win the All-Ireland, they'll play a Dublin 15 against some, or Galway played against the 1989 team. Yeah. You can have nice ideas like that and charge a tenner in, and whoever goes, the proceeds can go to the fella that's retiring, or the two or three lads. My thoughts, we'll move on from this, because
but there is charities benefiting from this too, and I think that's very important as well.
Well, you see, if you wanted to be really cynical, you'd say throw a charity in there, and then people won't really give out about me getting me 125
and with the match we can get Gooch up the quarter of a million here as well, so you won't have to give it all away.
Right, one quick one before we move on quickly, because we gave out about Dublin touting their tickets last week. Kerry are doing some, it's not on the same level as Dublin. They're charging 700 quid for a round of golf for two. You get dinner and you get two tickets. So basically, if you have that, 350 quid for a round of golf, dinner and a ticket. Now, I don't know what green fees in a round of golf are. Stevie, do you golf?
I do.
What would you be looking at? Would you be looking at 100 quid?
Anywhere between 50 and 100 quid.
Right, so yeah, if you're saying 100 100 quid for a round of golf. Dinner then might
it all
be
depends.
Another.
If it's a top class course, it could be 150, 200. Yeah,
right, so. Okay. So if you're, we'll say 100 for a round of golf, dinner then say 60 quid for dinner. So that's 160, and then the ticket is 350. So you're paying 190 for a 100 quid ticket. So they're still for an 80 quid ticket. So they're still charging maybe 110 on top of that for the ticket. So like, I mean, it's a, you can also say it's better value than what Dublin are offering, but it's also charging premiums on tickets, and county board's doing it. And I'd have issues with Kerry County Board and Dublin County Board doing this, because they're not the poorest county boards in the world. We know Dublin are rolling in money. We know Kerry make huge money over in America at big sponsorship dues and sending ex-players out there, and they've got a huge sponsoring Kerry group. I don't think Kerry and Dublin need to be charging extra for tickets on people wanting to go to the game and aiming them at the corporate sector. I think that county boards, like the Leashes, the Kildares, like, you know, I would have more sympathy on them maybe running raffles and trying to fundraise using their All-Ireland tickets. But Kerry and Dublin doing it, I don't know, it doesn't sit as well with me. Right, okay, we'll be back in a minute with some analysis. Dara, great to finally get to interview you.
Yeah? Oh, really, yeah.
Why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. And you can ask ex-players that. You can ask your, you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah. Mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB, backing club and county.
Right, lads, we're going to try and get through this whole analysis section without mentioning, there's only one rule, and I very rarely have rules in an analysis section. We have to get through this whole analysis section. It's going to take about 20 minutes, and we are not allowed to mention Dublin's bench or anything to do with Dublin's
well,
bench.
Well, how can you analyse Dublin without mentioning their bench?
Forget about it. Dublin's bench is, I could pull any person in off the street here and sit them down into this podcast and say, what is Dublin's, one of Dublin's biggest strengths? All their bench is very strong. It's not analysis. We're not going to use it.
I love
just
that we're
going to
we're
test ourselves.
This.
We're going to test ourselves out that we're going to rise above the Dublin bench analysis, yeah. Right?
Because after we spent 10 minutes talking about Connolly.
Now you can talk about one individual coming off the bench. You cannot talk about the Dublin bench as a collective in the last 15 minutes. Is that fair enough?
That's fair.
So we're all on the same page here. So Mayo and Dublin are waiting until Friday night to announce their teams. So it's interesting enough that on the Mayo team, realistically, the only question mark is whether Paddy Durkin starts or not, because Mayo have gone with the same team for both semi-finals against Kerry and into a pool of 16 starters of their over the last four games. So over the last four games, they've only been 16 names. So it's Paddy Durkin on, someone else off, you know, this kind of way. So the only question you would say about Mayo's team is Paddy Durkin. Now, Dublin have a load of choices on what they can do, but they have been keeping changes kind of to a minimum as well. And over the last three games, only Eric Lowndes and Niall Scully have been rotating in and out. So, like, I mean, if you're going to base it on the last three or four games for both teams, the only changes we're going to see is either Paddy Durkin starting in place of anybody on the team, because Durkin really is an all-rounder, or you're going to see, is it going to be Niall Scully or Eric Lowndes? Now, yeah. Paul Flynn is definitely in the shake-up after the way he played the last day. According to the bookies, Dear McConnelly is not in the shake-up, but it's going to be interesting, because, like, I mean, I'd almost say that Mayo coming into this final are more unpredictable in how they're going to play and where lads are going to play it in Dublin. I'm pretty sure I can name most of the Dublin team. I can name most of the Mayo team as well, but I've no idea where Lee Keegan's going to play, and I've no idea where Aidan O'Shea is going to play. And worst for Dublin is they've no idea where these two lads are going to play.
Well, for me, you know, Paddy Durkin has made a huge impact in the games that he's come off the bench and come into the games. You know, he's a massive presence driving forward for them, and he's got a couple of key scores for them in games as well. Does he start? I think he has to start. I think he has to start. And looking at the Mayo team, the only one place that I would maybe put him into now and take him out of the team, even though he's a natural defender, is for Jamie O'Connor. He's probably the only positional switch that I would make in the Mayo team, and you can afford to maybe play Durkin as a half back and push Lee Keegan further up the field, you know. So there's options there for Rochford with Paddy Durkin, but he has a big decision to make. Does he keep him on the bench and keep him and hope that he has the same impact that he has had in previous games? But I think it would be harsh on Jamie O'Connor as well, because he goes through an unwarranted amount of work that, you know, sometimes goes unnoticed for the Mayo cause as well. And, you know, he is still a scoring threat for them up front.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Well, I don't agree with it. I don't know whether I would mark or start Paddy Durkin, but if Paddy Durkin does start, Lee Keegan will be centre forward, which will have the knock on effect of playing Aidan O'Shea full forward.
No, I would start Durkin. I don't think he's going to, but I would start him, and I would take Seamus O'Shea out and put Lee Keegan in midfield, because I don't think he can let James McCarthy run mad or Brian Fenton. I don't think Seamus O'Shea is right for that.
Durkin is big and physical enough for midfield though as well.
No, he'd play Lee Keegan midfield, Durkin wing back.
Yeah.
Or do you think Lee Keegan's big enough for that role?
I think Durkin's a bigger presence maybe in around the middle of the field than what Lee Keegan is.
You could also play Dermot O'Connor in midfield, lads. He'd be well able physically to match up with James McCarthy. That way you can play Lee Keegan centre forward and Aidan O'Shea. I think we're going to see a surprise from Mayo. They've been given surprises all year. You can't go into the game. You have to surprise Dublin. I think Aidan O'Shea will play in the full forward line. I think Lee Keegan will play centre half forward because, like what Stephen Rutchard said to us in the semi-final, it might not be Lee Keegan's best position, but you have to give something, or you have to take something away to give something to your team. If Lee Keegan plays centre forward, Dublin centre back will mark him. Aidan O'Shea is a full forward. We'll see no sweepers or anything like this from Mayo. Mayo are going to man up. It's going to be 15 on a 15, and I think Mayo will try and surprise Dublin by playing Aidan O'Shea in the full forward line. Yeah. And the problem with playing Aidan O'Shea in the full forward line before was that Mayo played a sweeper. They played Kevin McLaughlin sweeper. So Aidan O'Shea was being double marked in there. So it's a bit of a waste of time playing him in there. If Mayo play Aidan in there with no sweeper, and they're not playing a sweeper now because Kevin McLaughlin's going to be wing forward, then Aidan O'Shea is in there with nobody covering him. And if you want to cover Aidan O'Shea, then Lee Keegan has a free role at centre forward. Do you know what I mean? So they'll get more joy out of Aidan O'Shea. And I think that something is going to surprise. I think the obvious thing is play Lee Keegan centre or wing back, Aidan O'Shea centre forward, Seamus O'Shea, Parsons in midfield. That's the obvious kind of lineup. I don't think Mayo are going to do the obvious thing.
Yeah, there's a couple of things here. I don't think Seamus O'Shea would be dropped. I think he's a big presence in the team. I don't believe he'll be dropped. I'm unsure if Stephen Rochford will make a huge decision, because he did last year with the goalkeeper and it backfired, you know, dramatically on him. If Jamer Connolly starts, you know, can we see Lee Keegan not playing in a half forward line? I can't see it. You know, who else picks up Jamer Connolly if Lee Keegan's not going to pick him up? So yeah. I think, you know, those type of changes are maybe too dramatic. I believe
we're going on the premise here that Dermot Connolly is not going to start.
Yeah, but sometimes that from a Mayo point of view, you know, start what you've gone with, and you know, go with, you know, maybe a few positional changes, all right, but start the starting 15 that has started in the last couple of games for you, and don't change things too dramatically. Yes, have a plan up your place in terms of positional switches, but you know, don't change personnel too dramatically. But for me, I would probably start Paddy Durkin, because I think he's made a huge impact. He's done more coming in off the game, and he deserves an opportunity to represent his county, you know, from the starting position.
He does, but like everyone deserves the opportunity. But at the same time, like because Dublin obviously have, I don't even can't even say that. But I'm pulling out of that. But should Mayo not have an impact on the bench? Like, I mean, if Paddy Durkin's not going to be on the bench, who's going? Like, they need an impact of two or three impacts off the bench in the last 15, 20 minutes. So it's not the worst thing in the world to have that.
And I think that's why he will keep Durkin in reserve. I think he'll target, he'll make the most of Connolly not being there, and I think he'll target Conor Callaghan with Lee Keegan just to say, hey, this is big time now, kid. Like, you know, you've been having a good season.
We're going to get to matchups in a minute, but I would disagree on that. Colin Boyle is going to sew it into Conor Callaghan, and he's going to go, welcome to senior championship
and
football.
I think
buddy.
Colin Boyle's the right man for Conor Callaghan as well, because he is so tenacious in the tackle, he's ferocious, he's in your face. But he puts a player on the back foot because he drives forward.
As
well.
Paul O'Connell says, put the fear of God in him. And yep. Colin Boyle will attempt.
Is he going to do that too?
Yeah, he will in a different way. But I think Colin Boyle will absolutely blackguard Conor Callaghan. I think he will. And that's the reality of it. And he's going to hit him hard. And Conor Callaghan is going to get a welcome to Championship football that I don't think he's gotten yet. No. Because he's been having it too easy. He's been kicking points like you like to do, Stevie, passing him over the bar under no pressure. And Dublin have been winning games at the Reese. So I think Niall Scully and Conor Callaghan, if Niall Scully starts, are going to get a serious waking into Championship football, because this will be real Championship football. This will be a team that can actually match Dublin physically where other teams absolutely can't. Here's another one I want to throw at you, lads. Mayo are stronger than last year, right? And I'll tell you why they're stronger. Andy Moran is flying it. Now, Johnny Cooper always does well on Andy Moran. Kevin McLaughlin is flying at a wing forward. He was wasted as a sweeper last year. They've abandoned the sweeper, which gave Dublin a free sweeper last year, which was obviously making Dublin's better forwards get scores easier than Mayo's arguably weaker forwards. A big one here, lads, is that Cathal Barrett is back in flying form, flying marking form.
Chris Barrett.
Who's Cathal Barrett? Chris Barrett. He's back and he'll probably mark Paddy Andrews. And Paddy Andrews always plays well against Mayo and he always does damage against Mayo. Now they have somebody to actually mark him. And like I said, we'll go through matchups in a minute. Dublin, then, you're to say, are they as strong as last year if Connolly doesn't start, if Paul Flynn doesn't start, if Michael Darmacaulay is struggling with a knee injury, Bernard Brogan's not even getting a run? They all started the All-Ireland first match last year. Do you know what I mean? You've Niall Scully in. Conor Callaghan's brilliant, but has he tasted this kind of heat of action before? So, like, I mean, just on when you throw in those kind of points, Dublin are unbelievable favourites here, and do they deserve to be?
I think actually Dublin and Mayo are both in a stronger position than what they were this time last year. Yes, Dublin can well afford to leave probably more experienced players on their bench, but the young guys have come in and performed extremely well, and Conn O'Callaghan is the prime example of that. They are probably adapting more to how teams play against them as well, as you know, we witnessed in the All-Ireland semi-final against Tyrone, and they've been far more comfortable throughout the course of this championship campaign. I think they're peaking. They've probably scheduled their training for them to peak and gradually get stronger and stronger as the championship has gone on, and they've been extremely comfortable in each and every game. Probably the Kildare Leinster final was their most difficult match throughout the course.
That's an interesting point, that the Kildare match is their most difficult match. Comfortably accounted for Carlow, whether you like it or not, the first round in Portlaoise, comfortably accounted for Westmead, comfortably accounted for Monaghan and Tyrone, all playing more defensive. Well, Westmead were blown away, I wouldn't even count that too much. Against Kildare played similarly to the way Mayo play, leaving four forwards up. They tried to attack Dublin. They had an awful start. They were 9 points down, and from the 10th minute on, it was a draw match. Now, I know Kildare got a late goal, but this is going to be more like the Kildare game. Now, Dublin have been priming their training because everyone's talking about Tyrone all year. Dublin have to shift their tactics and their focus away from that now in the last 3 weeks, and they have to think about Mayo, who are a different prospect. So the Kieran Kilkenny recycling the ball and, you know, hand passing it sideways, that's all gone now. So this is a completely different game. So Kieran Kilkenny is going to have to change his style of play. They're all going to have to change their style of play, because now they need to move the ball quick through the hands or through the foot. They're going to have a lot of options of kick passes into the full forward line, where they hadn't been doing that at all because it's just not on. Mayo will give you one-on-ones in there, because I think Mayo have to man up 15 and 15. So Dublin have to practice a whole new game plan. Now, we know they're brilliant players and they can do it, but it's a huge change, whereas Mayo don't really have to change anything the last 3 weeks, because what the way Kerry played will be similar to the way Dublin play. So Mayo just have a lot more championship experience having played that attacking style than Dublin will have had.
Well, they certainly have gone through, you know, the mix more than what Dublin have this year in terms of their intense battles and preparation for each and every game, you know, and having, you know, draws when things look down and out for them, you know, probably instilled even more belief in the team, believe it or not. But they have more players on form, and you mentioned a few of them, and the one player who stands out head and shoulders above them all for me is Andy Moran. The form that he has shown throughout the course of this year, his movement, you know, each and every young forward in the country should watch how Andy Moore moves for the ball and the amount of time he moves, you know, just to win one ball or even to create space for his teammates. He's exceptionally good at winning first phase ball, and you know, his shooting has come on leaps and bounds this year, in comparison to what it has been like in the last few years. So, you know, he's been a huge plus. So he has. Defensively, Colin Boyle is playing out of his skin, because I think Colin Boyle goes into each and every game now thinking that he's going to be taken off at some point, so he has to give it everything that he has. He was kept on in the last game alright, so you know, when a player is in so much and so good form, you've got to keep him on there. But Mayo have improved dramatically throughout the course of this year. A few months back you wouldn't have said that you would believe that they'd be in the All-Ireland final, but they have improved dramatically. They have gone more direct with their play. They've, you know, forgotten about Kevin McLaughlin as a sweeper, and I think Tony McEntee has had an influence on that there, because Tony, when he was over Cross McGlenn, played an all out kicking and attacking brand of football, and that's the way Mayo are playing now, and they are more dangerous by playing that type of football.
Yeah, no, I think what do you think about Dublin having to change their whole style of play, Conan? Because if you remember the analysis we did after the drawn match, or after the replay last year, they moved Kilkenny into the full forward line, and I remember commenting at the time, because I saw Jason Sherlock coming down to the sideline as Kilkenny was drifting out of it, waving at him to get him back into the full forward line, because like we said, Kilkenny slows down the play a lot, and which is brilliant against the Tyrones and the Monaghans. It's not brilliant against the Kerrys and the Mayos, because you need to move it, you need to move it that little bit faster.
Yeah, I think they will have to change the game, but I don't think the idea of Dublin not being tested is really fair, because I mean, the teams that Mayo were tested against aren't that good. Like, Dublin have just passed all their tests.
Well, they have the Kerry one, which we okay. I'll accept a lot of the other ones, but Mayo have been in true battles, which is important. And the Kerry test,
the battles that Dublin didn't allow themselves to be dragged into.
No, but and that's fair enough. But it's still a disadvantage to not have been in a battle, because you only learn truly about your team in a battle. Do we know about the Niall Scully?
You learn more about players, and players get more, you know, I suppose, battle hardened by going through the mix. And the likes of Mayo coming up against Derry and Clare this year, you know, sometimes you don't.
Dublin would have destroyed Derry.
I understand,
but that's not a point, and they would have.
Sometimes you go into a game to get there, maybe underestimating your opponent, but you all of a sudden find yourselves in a real tough competitive game, and you come away from it after winning, and you say, you know what, that was some result. And as a for team morale, it really lifts the spirits of everyone around you, and you gain more confidence the more of those type of games you be involved.
But it's not like this team have come from nowhere. This is a 2-time All-Ireland champion.
No, and that's the fair point. Like we're not doubting Dublin's character, because Dublin have beaten Mayo after replay two or three occasions. They've beaten Kerry in close games. Like, Dublin are a clutch team. There's no one suggesting that they're not, but they haven't been in clutch situations since last year's All-Ireland final, and I still think that might be, like, it might count against them a little bit. And not even the clutch situation, I do think not having played a team like Mayo at all this year, only Kildare, like arguably Kildare are a level below Mayo, but like, I mean, I do think Mayo's two semi-finals is an advantage.
Yeah, no, and I agree with the fact that they're going to have to change, and I think they'll struggle with that, because suddenly they'll be one-on-one. You might think that's a good thing, to be one-on-one in attack, and the players aren't used to winning ball on their own and turning and taking men on, which is what they're going to have to do, because looking at the matchups, I think Mayo have all the defenders there to cope with Dublin's forwards, as good as Dublin's forwards are. I think what's going to save Dublin is their defence as well. Like, it's going to be a game where both defences are on top, I think, and maybe Dublin's midfield might dominate. But yeah, they are. I think they will struggle in the first game of this All Ireland series.
Because when you're playing a hand passing game as often as Dublin are, and this recycling game, like it's hard to change that mindset. So now when Fenton has it, I mean, now Fenton's a great kick passer. When Kilkenny has it, when anyone in the half forward line has it, when James McCarthy has it, that kick pass is on. So like, you kind of have to give that kick pass now. So are you going to rush that kick pass? Are you going to, you know what I mean, slow that kick pass? Yeah, that kick pass has to come at the right time. I know they're all naturals.
Yeah, but Dublin have adapted, you know, to the hand passing game to suit their opponents, and they can equally adapt to a kick passing game to suit their opponents. And there will be more opportunity on Sunday to kick the ball against Mayo, and they've got more than enough quality players on the pitch. We spoke about Dublin simply having better footballers than Tyrone. You know, and that's the case. Dublin have better footballers across the, you know, their squad than any other team in the country. So therefore, they are capable of kick passing the ball, and I believe that they'll take that philosophy into the game on Sunday. They'll get the ball going forward more often. They'll believe the faster and the more times that it's played into their forward line, that they will cause more hassle towards the Mayo defence, and it gives themselves a better chance to win this All Ireland. And I don't think that they'll go into this game, you know, thinking that they can mess around with the ball, you know, hand passing across the field around the middle of the park without being put under intense pressure by Mayo and expect to get a result.
Yeah, well, there'll be times when they will have to hand pass it across when Mayo filter back, and Dublin will be filtering back. But in general, both these teams will be trying to keep forwards up the field and play in a more traditional style. But you look through the Dublin team, Keane O'Sullivan's not a good kick passer. Jack McCaffrey's not known for his kick passing. James McCarthy's not the greatest kick passer in the world. These are more runners. Fitzsimons not a great kick passer. Johnny Cooper is, but he could be in the full forward line. John Small not known for brilliant kick passing. Fenton's an excellent kick passer. Do you know, like, I mean, so now when you're changing all these lads who are comfortable with a running game and able to sew up these Monaghan's throw-ins, you're telling these now, lads, we need to move this fast through the foot. I'm telling you, when Mick O'Dwyer finished up with us, we played a running game under him, and Liam Kearns tried to get us to change the kick passing. It's not as easy as you say.
I know,
like,
it's
we
not
all
as
struggled
easy,
with
but
it.
All those players that you named there, you know, I can't remember too many times that those players actually kick a ball away. You know, they all have different styles and their own type of style in kicking a ball, and some is more unusual than others. Particularly Keane O'Sullivan is more straight kick, you know, but for me, Keane O'Sullivan is still an excellent kick passer of the ball. You know, he's probably not as natural as what a Bernard Brogan or a Paul Flynn or a Brian Fenton is, but he's still a perfectly good kick passer, and as good a kick passer that will be on the field on Sunday. So, you know, those players there, they do not concede possession too often. So I would still believe that they'll all have enough confidence to go and play a kicking brand of football.
Okay, two more things we want to get through here, lads. Matchups and kickouts. Which one will we start off with first? We'll start with the kickout. Sean Kavanagh and Tomás Shea were on the Sunday game the other night saying that that Mayo should concede the kick out. I heard Bernard Flynn last night on Game On saying that Mayo should push up in the kick out. Now, why is this always either one extreme or the other? Tomás O'Shea and Kavanagh came up with good reasons why they thought they should concede it. Like, this is not a black and white issue. No team can push up in the kickouts every time. No team can concede the kickouts every time. They're both madness. They're both stupid. Mayo will push up in the kickouts when they get the opportunity to push up, which is only after free kicks or breaks in play, like injuries or something like that, and you can reset. The idea that you can push up, the way the game has gone and the way wing forwards are all over the place, you can't get back up with the play by the time Cluxton and Clark will have it kicked out. So there's always going to be short kickouts to the cornerbacks right throughout this game. This game's going to be breathless, lads. It's going to be so... There's going to be no opportunity to gasp your breath. You're going to look at this going, thank God I'm not still playing, because I wouldn't be able to keep this kind of energy levels going. But the idea that will they push up or will they not... It's a silly question, really, Conan, because, like, I mean, it's not an exact science. You do it when you can, and other times you just have to realise we're not getting up there to do it, and we'll just have to stay, you know, keep our maybe zonal position.
You've summed it up, and, like, yeah, because Cluxton will just pick out Johnny Cooper if he can straight away. Like, so you're not going to be on top of that, but Mayo will back themselves. I don't think they're going to concede. Why would Mayo concede kickouts for a whole game? Like, they're good enough, they're fast, strong enough to get those balls, win the second balls. Like, there's no way that they'll back off for 70 minutes against Dublin. Like, they think that they could dominate the middle if they're in position to do it.
Yeah, I don't think Mayo don't fear Dublin at all. And, like, I mean, Dublin's kickouts are a huge advantage to Dublin. There's no doubt about that. But I think Fenton has the mobility in midfield to keep up with Fenton. I think Mayo have the athleticism and the tactical nous to be able to match up Dublin. And basically, the best way to sort out Cluxton's kickouts is that when you push up, every man is a man. There's no zonal. Mark your man and mark him from the outside. But they see, then I suppose he goes short. So, like, I mean, there's plenty of thought is obviously put into this.
The reality is Stephen Cluxton kicks 95% plus kickouts to the Dublin player and finds them. You know what I mean? So it's going to be extremely difficult for Mayo to go and win any amount of kickouts from Stephen Cluxton. There will be opportunities for them to press high, and when those opportunities are there for them to press high, then Mayo have to break even at least around the middle of the park, because when Stephen Cluxton goes long, you know, the Dublin players have a great ability to break to the wings, and even their half forwards come into play then for kickouts as well. So they have to really put Dublin under serious pressure in terms of trying to break even around the middle of the park and the ball goes long. In terms of short kickouts, I don't think they're going to win too many, but Stephen Cluxton is just too good at his kickouts to not find his own teammate. Mayo's kickouts, as proved in the semi-final, are excellent as well. You know, very, very fast with their setups. Very fast to get the ball out and get the ball moving as well. And I believe more times than not they'll go short as well. And what the Dublin do, you know,
Dublin will do the same thing as Mayo.
Exactly.
Dublin do the very same thing. They'll push up when they can, and they won't. And well, we talked about Dublin's aggressive push up. It's four across the full forward line, 3-3-3. That's what it was against Tirona, anyways. But Dublin are in the very same boat as Mayo, because Clark will tap it to the corner back if he gets a chance, and Dublin won't always have players up to be able to stop that. They'll do it when they have the free kick and an injury, or somebody will go down and pretend to need attention, and they'll get a push up then. Every team, Dublin have to talk about their press the same as every other team talk about the press. It's just Cluxton's that bit better at the kick.
It's not even about winning the ball sometimes. It's just like, based on what Mayo did so well in last year's finals, it's just about having men they push up on every man. When Dublin do win the ball, they'll win most of their own kickouts. So it's just having a man there, then they push him back and rock him back and just put pressure all over the field. They slow the attack
them. Yeah. The other thing is to say, let's leave Fitzsimons. Let's back up. Let's drop off Fitzsimons and let Cluxton go to Fitzsimons every time. And the man that drops off Fitzsimons, the minute it's rolling out to him, you're on him and we're all on. So give them that corner back, and then have enough men in positions. Just have a man standing 10 yards off Fitzsimons pretending that he's been distracted, and goad Cluxton into giving it to Fitzsimons, because I don't think Fitzsimons is the worst ball player amongst the Dublin backline. And then light on Fitzsimons and hope you get more of a mistake out of Fitzsimons than you will out of Cluxton. Cluxton's bloody ice cold blood running through his veins.
Cluxton isn't going to kick too many balls away. You know, if there's a Dublin man 5 yards in space, he'll find him on the chest. You know, that's the reality. As will Clark at the other end of the pitch.
Clark isn't as good now.
He's not as good. We know that he's not as good, because he's probably not as fast at setting it up, but he is fast at setting it up, but he's not as good, not as comfortable. But Cluxton's more seasoned at doing it. But the best that both teams can hope for is the long kickouts and breaking even in terms of trying to get their opponents' kickouts back in their own territory.
Yeah, okay, right, matchups, lads. And I'll tell you my matchups, and you can see whether you agree or disagree. Right, so I've Colin Boyle is going to sew it into Conor Callaghan. We'll do the Mayo ones first. I have Chris Barrett to pick up Paddy Andrews. Paddy Andrews is the danger man on the Dublin full forward line.
Do we jump in between your ones?
No, I'll go through my one, and then you can go through. Otherwise, it gets just so totally confusing. Harrison will mark Mannion. I think he has the size for him. He has the pace for him. I think Higgins will mark Dean Rock. I think Vaughan will mark either Flynn or Scully. And then you have who's going to pick up Kilkenny. I have Paddy Durkin if Keegan's centre forward, and I have Keegan if Keegan's in the defence. So they're my two permutations.
What was your last couple there, sorry?
Vaughan will mark whoever the last wing forward is. Vaughan will mark whoever's the wing forward that's going to be drifting back a little bit, you know, and Vaughan can do damage off that then. But I think Colin Boyle, Barrett, Harrison, Higgins, Keegan or Durkin on Kilkenny, and Vaughan on Flynn or Scully. They will be my matchups.
Well, I agree that Andrews is a danger man, but that's why I would put Harrison onto him, just because I think the way that with Gini, they put him on the Brogan last year, it's such a good game. I think you just need your best marker, and I think he is, so put him onto Andrews, and I think Barrett will go across the rock. I would put Higgins onto Mannion, just because he'll drift a little bit more, and you could maybe potentially exploit Higgins getting up the pitch.
So you'll be concerned about Chris Barrett's height on Dean Rock or Mannion. They're big men, both of them.
They're big men. But I would maybe sway more towards what Colin is saying there. I think definitely Higgins on Mannion to drag him further out the field, because Higgins, as proved in the quarter final in particular, the replay against Roscommon, how he was driving forward and breaking lines, and he's got that ability and drive to go and do that. And Mannion in the semi final against Tyrone spent, you know, a large amount of the first half and the half back line dispossessing Tyrone players. So if he wants to play that game,
He won't play that game against Mayo though,
I know that, but if he wants to play that game, then Keith Higgins will be best suited, and I think Keith Higgins will be the man for him, because he's come up against quality Fleur players like Mannion in times gone by, and has done extremely well on them as well.
I think they'll put Keegan on O'Callaghan, because it's just basically a toss up between him and Kilkenny, and again I think O'Callaghan's the biggest threat, so I would just hammer him with Keegan and put Boyle on Kilkenny, who he's marked well.
I would go with Boyle on O'Callaghan.
And you're right, I think Vaughan will pick up. I think it'll be Flynn But yeah, it'll be the hero.
Yeah, Cruppy Flynn. I think they've marked each other before. Right, we'll see who's right when this game kicks off. None of us will be right. Well, it's always the first thing I always look out for when the game starts is what the matchups are.
Well, we haven't spoken about the Dublin defence.
No, well, we're going to do that now. So I'll tell you my bankers. Johnny Cooper and Andy Moran is a banker. Always does well in Andy Moran. Marks him for the front. Andy Moran, Mayo really need to do a lot of work on how to get Andy Moran better ball, because Johnny Cooper has him figured out. Now, Mayo are giving him better ball this year, and Andy's staying closer to goal. And the lack of the sweeper is definitely going to help Andy Moran this year. Fitzsimons will mark Killian O'Connor. I think that's another banker. Jack McCaffrey will mark Kevin McLaughlin. That's another banker. Now we run into a little bit of troubled kind of waters. I have Keane O'Sullivan to mark Aidan O'Shea. I have John Small to man mark Jason Doherty. And I have Philly McMahon to mark Dermot O'Connor. And when Philly McMahon marks Dermot O'Connor, he'll let him off and he'll stay back around.
We were so close to getting everything the same. I have Small and Doherty as well. I have Jack on McLaughlin, Cooper and Fitzsimons inside on the two boys, but I have Keane O'Sullivan on Dermot O'Connor, because I think Mayo are going to try and free up Aidan O'Shea and even bring him to the other side of midfield just to try and get him free away from Philly McMahon. But I think Dublin will just push Philly McMahon onto him anyway, and when Dermot O'Connor drops, Keane O'Sullivan can naturally sweep a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
And not worry too much when Dermot O'Connor comes back forward. I think he'll have his number when he is attacking.
Yeah, there's a lot there, because Philly McMahon has picked up Aidan O'Shea and Keane O'Sullivan has picked up Aidan O'Shea, so which of them pick him up this week? And we know Dublin are not married to Keane O'Sullivan playing the sweeper. They have rotated it around a little bit, and you know, Philly McMahon maybe is a spare man. But listen, if it went that way, Conan, I would completely, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Keane and Philly, either Aidan O'Shea or...
I think that's the big decision from Dublin's point of view. Is it going to be Philly or is it going to be Keane? And the rest of the matchups, I think, were very fairly close to in terms of getting it spot on. We'd probably be a million miles away from it, but that's what we would expect based on what we're looking at here.
Great game, really, isn't it?
But that's the decision...
we should do this more often, isn't it?
The decision that has to be made by Jim Gavin is, does he put Keane O'Sullivan or Philly McMahon on Aidan O'Shea? If Aidan O'Shea drifts further forward, you know, which player, or even further back, sorry, which player can put Mayo on the back foot more? And I would say Philly McMahon.
Okay, right. Yeah. Listen, lads, we've gone way over time on that, so we'll be back in a minute with predictions.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D right at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're looking
well,
at me
a crowded area, isn't
you're
it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in Coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Alright, before we get into predictions, we obviously didn't do the matchups in midfield, but I thought they were so obvious we would all agree on that Parsons will mark Fenton and Seamus O'Shea will mark James McCarthy. So we're all in agreement on that, so there was no point in even mentioning it. Right, lads, predictions. Before we get into predictions for the game, lads, there's a couple of kind of novelty bets that I want to run through you with you. RT man of the match. And it's gas that this is even quoted, because, like, I mean, the power that these lads have
put
to be
money
picking,
in the hands
picking,
of RT.
Yeah, putting your money in the hands of three fellas who could have a few quid on it. Look, we're not accusing anybody of that, but, like, I mean, it's only human nature to potentially have a look at things like this. Conor Callaghan is favourite for man of the match, lads, at 7-1. Next is Kieran Kilkenny at 9-1. Next is Dean Rock at 9-1. Their joint, obviously, not next. Dermot Connolly is at 10-1, when Dermot Connolly is 1-5 to start, which there's a little bit of a Jack McCaffrey 11-1, which is a good call. Jack McCaffrey is a big game player and is top class. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Dublin players before we get to the first Mayo player, which is Aidan O'Shea at 12-1, then Andy Moran at 14-1, along with Paul Mannion. Lee Keegan is 16-1. So, like, Brian Fenton is 16-1. He's won All Ireland, won Man of the Match in All Ireland final before as well. So, look, I think Man of the Match is just so difficult to predict. It's a shot in the dark, really.
Listen, sometimes Brian Fenton came through and got man the match. You know, in his first year, I think, you know, at 16-1, I think that's an exceptionally good bet. Lee Keegan at 16-1 is certainly worth value for money as well, and it's a lottery. Yeah, it's a lottery.
It is a lottery.
When you look at the quality of players on show on Sunday, there's not many of them can turn up and perform at a huge level that it's just almost impossible to pick.
Colin Boyle 22-1, is that right?
Colin Boyle is 22-1. Yeah,
Jesus, licking my lips at that. That's well,
who did you have Colin Boyle man marking actually? Because you have
Mon Kilkenny.
You have Mon Kilkenny.
I think Colin Boyle has a better chance of getting man of the match if he's in on Colin O'Callaghan stopping him and the threat that he has been all year.
Like, he'll stop Kilkenny, and like, he'll be so paranoid he's going to come off that he'll be bombing up and down the pitch every chance he can get.
Yeah, it's hard to know, lads. I think if Lee Keegan on Kilkenny is a great shout, I think Kilkenny's heart will be broke chasing after him. Anyways, who do you think's favourite to be sent off, lads?
Philly McMahon.
It's not a bad call at all, but you're wrong.
Is it Dean Connolly?
No, you're wrong as well. Lee Keegan is favourite to be sent off at 14-1. Who's favourite for first yellow card?
John Small.
Johnny Cooper.
Lee Keegan at 9-1. I'm surprised Lee Keegan is favourite for both those things. Here's another very good bet that I think would be a good call. Dublin only to score a goal, so Mayo not to score a goal. I think that's a very good bet, and that's 12-5, 2.5-1.
That's a great
for Dublin to score a goal.
Dublin don't concede too many goals, to be fair, and they have the best goalkeeper in the country, so it's a good bet.
You don't really get inside them too often.
Yeah, here's another nice little bet. Kieran Kilkenny, Brian Fenton, and Jack McCaffrey all to score 2 or 9-4.
Brian Fenton, Jack McCaffrey, and Kieran Kilkenny.
Yeah, you'd say Kieran Kilkenny and Jack McCaffrey will get a score. Brian Fenton.
I'd be confident that would maybe happen too.
The odds aren't great.
I'd be confident that maybe happen. Yeah, you're right, actually, Con. The odds are not great. Right, yeah. Okay, that's enough of that. Predictions for the match. I'd say we're going way over time here, as usual, but it is an All Ireland final. Dublin, amazingly, are 2-5. Mayo, amazingly, are 3-1. Now, you have to remember, lads, these are two teams that have not been separated by more than a point only once, and that was 2015 in a replay when they'd drawn the first game. Like, this, we're talking about this modern rivalry between these two teams. How can a team that has never been beaten regularly, beaten regularly by 1 point and drawn twice with this same team, how can they be 3-1 outsiders? Lads, I think it's the greatest value bet as you're ever going to get.
Don't be looking at me first. Go on, Conor.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth here.
Maybe because they haven't beaten them.
Was it 2012, the last time they beat them in the championship, was it? Yeah, All-Ireland semi-final.
2012, yeah.
Like, maybe that's right, but they have been close. And like, it's funny, when you look through the matchups, it becomes very apparent that Mayo were the second best team in the country by a distance, and you start to think, why have we not seen this all along?
Like, Kerry would not be 3-1 against Dublin, that's.
No, and I don't think Kerry would have as good a chance as Mayo would do. That's
agreed.
The funny thing.
Agreed.
Yeah, so maybe 3-1 is. Like, I wouldn't, like, if I was a bookie, I'd be a lot safer than that. But I can't believe, no, I'm not even taking the piss, but I can't believe that a draw is down at 9-1. Like, are you telling me these teams play 9 times, they're only going to draw once? Like, you're talking 4 or 5 teams, I'd imagine.
Well, no, they've drawn twice in how many games?
4 championship matches? The last 4.
Okay, that's half, is it? Well, 2012, we'll have to count that because that's modern game. 2012, 2013 final. Not in 2014. 2015 semi-final. Yeah, draw. 2016 final. How many is that? I'm counting them, so I hope you're on the outside there.
It's 2 draws and 6, is it?
2 draws and 6, so it's 1/3, yeah. So the draw is a good value at 9-1, basically.
Yeah.
You're not good at math, Stevie, I know, by the way you're the way you're looking at me. Right, so basically the handicap bet is Mayo plus 3, Dublin minus 3. Mayo plus 3 points. 3-point head start for a team that's only ever been beaten by more than 3 once out of 6 games against Dublin, and that's 6-5, over even money for Mayo with a 3-point head start.
Yeah. Listen, I think all the handicap bets and all are a waste of time. I just see Dublin winning this game outright, and that's just it. They are the best team.
You're getting no value in that now, because like, it's easy to say Dublin going to win. They're 2-5 favourites.
I understand that, but you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a close game, but I just think Dublin have have enough to see it out.
Oh, you were nearly going out.
No. Like you have been talking
if
about.
If they need to, they can.
The Dublin backup, you know, we'll not they mention
can,
that word.
They can introduce a very strong beep. Right, you're going for a Dublin win, Steve. You're not going near any handicaps.
I'm not going near any handicaps because I just predict this game to be extremely close. I would listen, I like Dublin. Sorry, do I like Dublin and what they bring to the occasion. I'd love to see a team do three in a row, but I would love to see Mayo win the All-Ireland. I think 31 counties would love to see Mayo win the All-Ireland. We can't expect to see a spectacle. We have the two best teams sitting in the All-Ireland final. There's not going to be much between these teams, and there's no point in looking at handicaps or predicting handicaps. I just think, based on what I've seen and the improvement that both teams have made this year, I think Dublin are going to win it slightly.
Conan.
Yeah, plus three is an amazing bet, because I don't think I think it'll be a draw, but I don't think that will ever be in it. Like, after a replay as well, I think it'll be within 3 points. I think there's much less pressure on Mayo this year, because after another year of being written off and told that they're finished and whatever, they must just realise we'll get back here again if we want to. Like, you know, they're by far the second best team in the country, so this isn't the be all and end all. So somewhere that has to resonate with them. Like, you know, it doesn't matter, we'll get another chance at this. So we think they're going to come in with a lot less pressure on them. But I think it's such a well matched sort of setup. I think both defences will be on top, and I do think it'll be a draw.
I think Dublin are a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant team. I also think the three in a row is very pressurised. Like, both teams are under pressure. Every team in Ireland are under pressure. But the three in a row is such a big deal. And that's a lot of pressure to bring in. I don't think Dublin are as strong as last year. I know they've been blowing teams away, but I don't think they have been tested, so they haven't got that white heat of battle yet. I think Mayo are the opposite in that they have. I think Mayo are much stronger this year. They've played 9 games. There's a bang of Tyrone in bloody 08 about them, where they're on this roll and there's just nothing going to stop them this year. They don't fear Dublin. They have that mad hunger desire that Dublin just simply cannot have. Yeah. You simply cannot have. Dublin are trying to aim for a 3 in a row, which is an incredible, incredible achievement. And I just think that Mayo are going to win the game. I think Mayo will win the game. I think that comes a point with teams that lose that this has to turn around. Yeah. Like, you can't keep coming back to the well and missing out. It's just not logical. The law of the laws of averages are with them. They cannot keep coming back year after year with the same team. Ye were beaten in, I was looking into some stuff there for the GR Live on Friday night. Ye were beaten in 99 by Meade. You're beaten in 2000 by Kerry. You're beaten in 2001
by Galway.
All by Kerry by a replay, Galway by a point, and Meade, you were beaten by 4 points your first year. Yeah. That's 3 years, right? Ye came back.
We knocked on the door, all three won the All Ireland. By knocking on the door for us, it gave us belief that we could actually go on and win, you know, in Croke Park. And I suppose the
then you won it. Now, Mayo are 2 years on ye, right? But, like, I mean, same principle applies. If you keep coming back and having the character
knocking
to come
the door,
back, you'll get your bloody rewards. And I think Mayo will get the rewards on Sunday.
Well, I hope you're right. I do. I really do hope you're right. And listen, I'm only basing on what I believe. I think Dublin might just have enough to win it. I'd love Mayo to win the All-Ireland. But, you know, I'm a huge believer in, if you keep knocking on that door, eventually it's going to open for you. And I think that this Mayo team have a serious drive and ambition, more than any Mayo team that's gone by in years gone by, and to go and actually win the All-Ireland. And, you know, they won't have too many more greater opportunities than what they have this year. So they've got to go and make it count. They have to go into this game with a serious, you know, belief in their own ability to go and get the result. Something similar to what they went into the replay against Kerry, and just actually see a team out and go for the juggler from the start. And they will have a chance on Sunday. They will have a chance for sure. And they will believe, and they can't look in about hard luck stories and curses. They have to forget about all of that there. And I don't think that they actually do look too much or too serious into that there, but, you know, they have to forget about years gone by and what happened in finals. They just have to take, you know, their semi-final performance and improve on it, and if they do that, then they have a really, really good opportunity to win this All-Ireland.
Sean Kavanagh, Conan, we'll give the last word to you, said that in 2008 they felt invincible. They played 9 games. He said going into that final against Kerry, and they were 3-1 outsiders, I'd say, going into that, because that was as good a Kerry team as you will ever see. Now, Tyrone have had 2 All-Irelands in their pockets already, so, like, I mean, it's not the same situation. But that feeling of invincibility, that we cannot be beaten here this year, we've played 9, this will not end this Sunday. You know, these kind of speeches that are made, I say, Jesus, the Mayo lads, they're the hairs will be standing on the back of their necks going out into that field.
Come far too far.
We've come too far for this shit. Like last year, we're not going out there to lose these lads again. Dublin, on the other hand, will be in the dressing room. Lads, you know, we're favourites. We have to match their intensity. You know, it's a different speech altogether, because Dublin, we're going to have to... If Dublin match Mayo's intensity, Dublin will probably win. But matching a team like Mayo's intensity isn't always easy.
What Dublin do so well is they just commit themselves to a game. It's like they never seem to worry about the occasion or, you know, what's coming next. They just get so involved in this battle, and it does seem like they're wired to the moon for everything. And I think that's why we'll get this standoff now, and that's why we will see Stevie again towards the end of the year. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time for the replay.
Well, if not, Stevie, thanks very much for your input. And we'll see
it's
you
my pleasure.
We'll see you in February, where we can have a good whinge about championship structures or something in February, when
National League and winter training and
overtraining, or yeah, there's no ban, there's no winter ban, counties aren't looking after the winter ban or not going along with it. Right, that's all we have time for. We'll be back as usual on Monday with All-Ireland champions to celebrate. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.